This is the L2SI Report, dispatches from a rapidly changing, rapidly improving world. Good news headlines for the week ending August 12, 2006. A good time to be born. Instant messaging improves language skills. All cleaned up and ready to go. And we're inconsistent, and that's good. Plus, 3 years of good news in 30 seconds. And now, here's the host of the L2SI Report, Phil Ballermaster.
Thank you, Michael Sargent. Live to see it, friends. This is indeed the L2SI Report, where we track the better tomorrow we're all heading towards today. We've got some truly encouraging good news to report this week, so let's jump right to it. Item 1. Via InstaPundit, we have this very encouraging assessment of health and longevity as generational phenomena from the New York Times. Reading in part from the article, new research from around the world has begun to reveal a picture of humans today that is so different from what it was in the past that science say they are startled. Over the past 100 years, says one researcher, Robert W. Fogel of the University of Chicago, humans in the industrialized world have undergone a form of evolution that is unique not only to humankind, but unique among the 7,000 or so generations of humans who have ever inhabited the Earth. The difference does not involve changes in genes, as far as is known, but changes in the human form. It shows up in several ways. From those that are well known and almost taken for granted, like greater heights and longer lives, to ones that are emerging only from comparisons of health records. The biggest surprise emerging from the new studies is that many chronic ailments like heart disease, lung disease, and arthritis are occurring an average of 10 to 25 years later than they used to. There's also less disability among older people today, according to a federal study that directly measures it. And that is not just because medical treatments like cataract surgery keep people functioning. Human bodies are simply not breaking down the way they did before. Even the human mind seems improved. The average IQ has been increasing for decades, and at least one study found that a person's chances of having dementia in old age appear to have fallen in recent years. End quote. So it turns out that the obvious answers as to why this is happening, better nutrition, better sanitation, improved health care infrastructure, are of course correct, and that their impact is greatly magnified by early childhood. People are living longer today because they had a cleaner, safer, healthier, more nutritionally sound environment, by and large, than their parents did. Chances are your mother had a healthier early childhood than her mother did, and you had a healthier earlier childhood than she did. Chronic illness in early childhood predisposes an individual to complications and other illnesses throughout life, while diminishing growth rate. These later generations, which have managed to avoid or lessen the impact of childhood illnesses, tend to be much more robust physically, both taller and heavier than their ancestors. Well, we all know that increases in body weight are accompanied by a greater risk of obesity and all the complications associated with it. So it's interesting, then, that even though we are much fatter than previous generations, a point that seems to be made quite a bit, we are much, much healthier than they were. On a recent edition of the Glenn and Helen Show, Dr. Michael Zimmel, discussing the obesity problem, commented that we may be pushing our luck in this regard, that with obesity rampant among younger and younger children, we may be witnessing the emergence of the first generation to be less healthy and to have a shorter life expectancy than their parents. Well, there's no question that the problem of childhood and teenage obesity needs to be addressed, but it seems that Robert Fogel's research may provide some mitigation to that fear. After all, fat as they may unfortunately be, there's no question that the generations coming up now have had exemplary early childhoods, probably the healthiest ever. Other than the weight problem, which we need to help them beat, these kids would appear to be very healthy and have a very long life ahead. Item 2. This could well be our most counterintuitive good news story of the week, or month even. Reading from a recent article in the Toronto Sun, are you worried the acronyms and other linguistic shorthand used in casual computer instant messaging may be corrupting your kids' grammar and syntax? Relax. New research by two University of Toronto sociolinguists to be presented tomorrow at the Linguistic Society of Canada and the U.S. annual meeting shows quite the contrary. Everybody thinks kids are ruining their language by using instant messaging, but these teens' messaging shows them expressing themselves flexibly through all registers, Associate Professor Sally Taliamonte, 46, said. They actually show an extremely lucid command of the language. End quote. We were pleased to report last week how short messaging service is saving lives in China, so we're second to none in promoting unexpected benefits of this kind of technology. But I think the best anyone could have hoped for in regard to what instant messaging is doing to teenagers' language capability would have been that it isn't somehow completely destroying it, along with good-sized chunks of their brains. But no, apparently it isn't doing any particular harm and may be providing some help. While parents still might cringe at much of the spelling and grammatical usage displayed in instant messaging, the researchers report that kids are actually developing a, and this is a quote, linguistic hybrid, a fusion of formal and vernacular features of language. No doubt, purists will continue to wring their hands about what's happening with kids these days, but there's clearly an argument to be made that developing and practicing with a whole new model of communication allows kids to flex linguistic muscles, which otherwise would have remained dormant. As long as they don't carry too many of the alternate spellings and weird abbreviations into more formal written language, maybe there's something for us all to be happy about. Item 3. You gotta love this. Yahoo News reports as follows. San Clemente del Toyo, Argentina. Dozens of freshly cleaned Magellanic penguins waddled into the ocean Monday to the applause of onlookers, the first batch of close to 200 goo-covered birds that were rescued and washed after an oil spill. The 49 penguins, each tagged with metal identifying bands, were released on a windswept South Atlantic beach, not far from the outlet of Argentina's River Plate. Another 141 birds that survived an unexplained oil spill off the Patagonia in May still await release. Now, I don't have anything profound to add to this story. Some good news just speaks for itself. Bon voyage, little birdies. Item 4. You know, sometimes good news isn't so much a matter of discovering a new good thing as it is recognizing that an existing bad thing isn't nearly as bad as we thought. Case in point, the so-called culture wars. If you indulge regularly in op-eds, talk radio, and, let's face it, blogs, you're likely to be inundated with the notion that fundamental ideas about how society should be structured are tearing us apart. We all know that backward red state hicks are one step away from imposing federal laws that outlaw double beds and make it mandatory that kindergartners learn that Adam and Eve rode dinosaurs to church every Sunday, and at the same time, godless liberals are working tirelessly to slaughter every baby in sight and make us all gay. We're constantly being told how polarized we are and that we're only getting more so. Well, now, Reuters reports as follows. The so-called culture wars rending America over such issues as abortion, gay marriage, and stem cell research may be overblown, based on a U.S. poll released on Thursday. Despite talk of culture wars and the high visibility of activist groups on both sides of the cultural divide, there's been no polarization of the public into liberal and conservative camps, the Pew Research Center said, commenting on its poll of 2003 American adults. Best illustrating the willingness of Americans to consider opposing points of view is that two-thirds of poll respondents supported finding a middle ground when it comes to abortion rights, a solid majority that stood up among those calling themselves evangelicals, Catholics, Republicans, or Democrats. Now here's the best part. On five prominent social issues, abortion rights, stem cell research, gay marriage, adoption of children by gay couples, and availability of the, quote, morning after pill, most Americans did not take a consistent stance. Just 12% took the conservative position on all five issues, while 22% took the opposite stance on all five. The bulk of Americans had mixed opinions. End quote. Well, the bottom line here seems to be that most people, in spite of it all, are reasonable. We can see the potential drawbacks in ideas that we favor, and we can see the potential good that may be present even in ideas that we oppose. This isn't to say there's no polarization going on in this country. Obviously, editorial pages and political platforms are getting more and more polarized. But this may have to do more with effective marketing than it does with revealing a deep ideological split. Perhaps we've developed a resistance to marketing over the years, and media and political types are forced to go extreme just to get our attention. So not only are we inconsistent, in a good way, and reasonable, maybe we're even developing a resistance to ideological marketing. That, folks, would be a hat trick. Finally, last week marked the third anniversary of one of the two blogs that I manage. Of course, the blog related to this report is L2SI, the home of good news evocative of a coming world that's well worth living to see. But before L2SI, there was and is The Speculist, whose tagline is Live to See It. But that wasn't always the case. When I first launched the blog, my tagline was, what might be, what might not be, what might have been, whatever. And that is still very much the spirit of the blog. So here we are 3 years into the future, and it's been a blast. Many thanks to Stephen, Michael, Kathy, Carl, Andrew, Blacknail, Triticale, and of course, the Specu wife. and many others who've come along for all or part of the ride. And now, I promise 3 years of good news in 30 seconds. Here goes nothing. Alias, Amazing Exponentials, Archaeology, Artificial Intelligence, Better All the Time, Biodiversity, Biomimetics, Bionics, Biotechnology, Blogging, Book Review, Brain Careers, Carnival, Choose Your Future, Cloning, Computers, Cosmology, Cryonics, Dinosaurs, Discoveries, Drugs, Economics, Energy, Entertainment, Environment, Evolution, Fast Forward Radio, Film, Finance, Future, Future Salons, Futures Past, Geek Projects, Genetics, Global Warming, Health, Medicine, Humor, In the Future, Intelligence, Inventions, Life Extension, Lost, Media, Media Reviews, Medicine, Nanotechnology, Neat Stuff, Nutrition, Paleontology, Paranormal, Philosophy, Physics, Practical Time Travel, Prediction Surveys, Published Quick Links, Rep FedLab, Robotics, Scary Stuff, Scenarios, Sex, Singularity, Small World, Society, Space Elevator, Speaking of the Future, Stillness, Superman, TV Shows, Transhumanism, Transportation, Virtual Reality, Weight Loss Chronicles, Alien Life, Jetpack Vacation. Alright, that wasn't really all the good news, it's just some of the topics we've written about at The Speculist over the past 3 years, and I don't know whether it took 30 seconds or not, but suffice it to say that there's lots more to come. So please check us out at www.speculist.com. And until next time, I'm Phil Bauermaster. Live to see it.
The L2SI Report is a Speculist production. For more information on the topics discussed in this edition of the L2SI Report, visit our website at www.speculist.com.